Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Don't Make Me Come Back There. We are a funny podcast about family. My name is Dustin Nickerson.
Buddy.
I'm a stand-up comedian and the host of the aforementioned podcast. And alongside me, back in bed, Stephen English.
Wish you wouldn't do that.
Yeah, he's just snuggled up in my blankies near my high thigh. And
yeah, we're sleeping head to toe.
Obviously, right? Because
right.
I know
we're both
like,
6 feet tall,
right? And I know it might be controversial to some that we're sharing a bed, but at least we're socially distancing. And what I know for sure is you cannot get COVID from someone's foot to mouth. I know that is exclusive to the head to the foot mouth disease. What was that
and
one?
I did
foot and mouth. Isn't that a disease?
Foot and mouth. Yeah, it's for babies get.
Yeah, that's right. You know that baby. Speaking of foot and mouth.
Yeah.
Your baby did something significant with its feet. That was a terrible segue, but
that was weird. But
speaking of a disease,
true. Yeah, yeah, his feet fell off.
His feet
plumb fell off. Who would have thought? Type 2 diabetes, 10 months old.
Pain free though. I've heard at that age that's pain free. It's more
like a Kit Kat.
It's more like a loose pair of shoes that just slipped off.
Yeah. Yep.
He took his first steps. Yeah.
He took his first steps.
They weren't strong. He's 3 or 4 and then he fell.
Yeah. I mean, he's definitely like next day after your 21st birthday steps, you know, like he was definitely look hungover.
That's great, man. That's so fun. Has he walked since? Did he do the one? And then he's like, "Nah, I'm good. I'm gonna go back.
He does it. We get him to do it. He does it every day now.
Is he walking more than you right now?
I just got myself, not even a wheelchair, just a chair with wheels, like an office chair. And I just kind of just glide around. if I can't get there by kicking, I ain't going.
Just a lazy Professor X. So we've been rewatching the X-Men series, and then there's this one, it's in season 5. My kid's like freaked out. So they're like, you know, the X-Mansion, you know, they've got a training center, and there's a spot where Professor X is doing gymnastics.
Sure.
Like he's just on the rings, just getting it, you know, and then he's on the even bars, you know, the ones where you got your left arm and your right arm one.
Right,
and at one point, he like decides that he's done and he just like backflips into his chair. And you know, it's old 90s animation, so it's like very like linear. And it was like, it was pretty cool. And my kids are like, "Wow, that's amazing." And then like, what is he doing? I was like, well, you know, he can control his body like that. You know, he can make himself like levitate and stuff. And then they go like, well, then why is he working out? And I'm like, that's a fair question.
I mean, it's almost like he could create a floating. First of all, he could just float himself.
Right.
He created a floating wheelchair. Just make some bionic legs, buddy.
Right.
just for, it's like a, you just want sympathy at this point. Like, it just seems like you're kind of doing it. You're kind of doing a little much there.
He really could with that. Like, he can make anything. He could just straighten his own legs out, right? Like, couldn't he? And just float around Magneto style. Magneto never walks. Magneto doesn't only walk. He keeps his feet together for some reason, and then he has his hands kind of out to the side.
Does Professor X have telekinesis? I don't know if that's part of his like actual, like Jean Grey for sure, but I don't know if that's part of his
He can freeze people. He can move people. He can do all that.
True.
Yeah, that's what makes this thing fly, from what I understand. Yeah. But I mean, a fair question. Yeah, I forgot how Magneto there's like late, like season 5 Magneto. He's got this big beard and this long hair. It's great.
Sure.
It's great. It's really,
like
really
good.
Like
the real Magnus. Like he's like,
yeah, that's when they're calling him Magnus. Yeah. That's always what Hank calls him. Anyways, guys, welcome to Don't Make Me Come Back.
About comics. Yeah.
At any given time, you can expect Steven and I to go on rants about this kind of stuff. But welcome to our little podcast, The Good. Today on our podcast, we have a good friend of mine, a stand-up comedian. And the first time we've had him on, I'd hoped for so long to have him on the pod, but today we have, you know, I wanted to do it in person, but you know, COVID, a little thing. I wanted to chat with him. So we have Jason Earls on today, ladies and gentlemen. Jason Earls, like I said, stand-up comedian, dad, husband, overall funny guy. You can give him a follow on Twitter and Instagram at Jason Earls. You know how to spell Jason Earls, E-A-R-L-S. And owner of Earl Sandwiches. And, you know, he's very...
Really?
But that would be great. Yeah. Or isn't it like Sir... what is that?
Earl of Sandwich. That's the guy that created the sandwich.
Yeah.
Because he wanted to... You know, this is the real story. He wanted to have something that... He wanted to be able to eat while he was playing cards. Mm-hmm. So he made a sandwich.
And there you go. And we actually...
Story of the sandwich.
I don't want to talk about it now because, FYI, that's what we talked about for the entire hour, me and Jason. So...
Sorry. Spoiler alert.
You guys got it. No, we had a nice chat. We started off talking... So earlier this week, he made a video response to the Candace Owens viral clip. And we talked a little bit about that clip. But more so, we were talking about trolls and how we both like really getting into it with some trolls here and there. It's a good time. I like it. I like to get in on those comments. I like to see if I can. I'm not like trying to win debates. Sometimes I'm just trying to win them over. I talk about this on the last Monday with Mel. As you guys know, I have my ignore, engage, make fun of category. But we talk a little bit about that. We certainly talk about current events. There's a little bit in the news lately. I don't know if you guys have been, don't know how plugged in you are.
Did you hear about the Spinosaurus might have been the first swimming dinosaur?
Right.
Did you see that? That's
huge,
crazy.
And MLB draft, huge. Huge
the first of like 90, I guess they usually have like 96 rounds. I think this year they're only doing like 35, like a really pared down draft.
Oh, yeah.
Like
thankfully.
47 rounds.
They showed the
really
thing.
Economical.
I only knew it was happening because I follow a bunch of Seattle media sports guys. And someone was like, there's that moment that so-and-so got the call that it was going to be a Seattle Mariner. And I was like, that's not his genuine feelings right now.
Right. He went straight to voicemail.
you ghost the Mariners GM.
It's like, no, I'm good.
No, I'm straight. Is this 1997 or 2003? Okay. No, I'm out.
Right.
Peace. I'm out. So we have a nice chat about that. You know, we talk a lot about race. We talk about protest. We get his take on everything going on. We talk about comedy and kind of what it means for us to sometimes walk the line, but ultimately, you know, all we can do is be our most genuine self, and how sometimes that upsets people, and other times people really dig it. And then at the end, we kind of wrap up with him sharing a little bit. You know, I asked Mike the same question of just kind of what it looks like as an African-American dad to have the conversation with your children about what's happening in the world, about their relationship. Their relation to police officers, their relationship to their community, their relationship to their neighbors, and kind of talks about, you know, you give them an ideal of what things should be, and then you also kind of teach them a reality of what things are. and it was good. It was a nice chat. There were some laughs. We had a good time. So I hope you guys enjoy this episode with Jason Earls. I know Steven won't. Steven doesn't listen to the episodes, you guys.
I don't really know what this podcast is about. I really don't. It's a funny podcast about, I think you said,
you know, I think even
salamanders.
I mean, our little tagline, funny podcast about family, funny, debatable. About family, I mean, debatable at times.
Right.
But it is catchy, you know.
It's good. It's a very good.
We got some strong really marketing. So, yeah.
We should just sell that tagline to somebody and just quit.
You know, somebody who has a better podcast. Yeah, we absolutely should. So
yeah.
I wanted to tell you, so yesterday I went to a protest, and it was a very San Diego protest. It was right. Up at Moonlight Beach.
It was against bummers.
Against what, bummers?
it was just against just like bad vibes.
It was against, you know? Yeah, people killing your vibe is what it was.
No bad vibes.
No bad vibes. Yeah. It was a very funny experience. So I, you know, been in and around protests before this and cleanup and stuff going on. And I didn't, you know, you find these things on the Twitter and you figure out what's going on where. And I went with my friend Ray and we went there. It's a very San Diego, it was at a beach. It started at a beach and it was, what I didn't know is that it was largely organized by high school students. I didn't know that. That's not in the advertisements. That's not, you know, nowhere in there. And so we get there, and it's a little light, and I was like, man, where's the protest? And then I saw a white girl in a Kaepernick jersey. I'm like, there it is.
Yeah, it's either downtown San Francisco on a Sunday in 2009 or a protest today. You know, there was like a hot minute.
I felt bad. I didn't judge her, but I was like, that's my identifier. And it was just a very, I was like, my whole relationship with protests, like, protests are important and you should go in support. But it is, some of it's a bit of a young man's game. And that first, my first thought was like, say I want to go, but I mean, it's hard to find beach parking. I mean, it's
sure,
and that's a whole thing. And then it's like I gotta get sunscreen. And then I was like, well, it will help me get my Fitbit goal for the day. I mean, like I got a lot of mix, you know. And it was just it was a great experience. And you know, like just this one in particular was so funny because so I get there and it starts at the beach, and then we walk around like the community a little bit, and we kind of go up to this main intersection, and you know what? It's so funny because, you know, the if you've never been to a protest, a lot of time, especially like a marching one, most of the action's up front. You know, like that's where most of the cheerleaders are. And you're kind of like in the back. It's a little bit like being in like the third row in the van. You're like, I can't really hear the music.
Sure.
I don't really, like I'm trying to do the cheers, but I don't know which one you're doing.
You got to face backwards.
Yeah.
Like you're in the back of a station wagon. You only see what you've been to. You can't see where you're going.
Yeah. I'm like, which chant are they doing? And they're like, I can't breathe. And I'm like, I can't hear. You don't understand.
Right.
I'm not.
Right, right.
And so you and then we ended up getting like these four, we got these four corners, you know, on this intersection. And then I realized that like, I don't know how they pulled it off, but they kind of like relegated everyone above 30 and the people that like just were old onto one really sad, unenthusiastic corner.
Right.
Like the other three corners were fire. They had they had drums. People brought drums. They had the megaphones.
Right.
And like we were on ours and we were holding signs and we were doing some chants, but like we also had like a lot of kids in the wagons.
I feel like you were mostly reapplying sunscreen at that point. You got a certain, but this is just like, listen, you guys, like, this is like, I got a mole that I got to get looked at on Tuesday. So I need to make sure that I got to get this slathered up, you guys.
But we were also like the only ones that worked that day, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
And had other things like that we had. And I was like, in my mind, I was like, I mean, like, I do have to get back to my kids. I mean, I do.
Right.
It was just,
I know it's weird. It's it's weird when like it's it is well there was I mean there was the there was like huge like the one that went down University from Hillcrest that went to University. You saw those pictures that were going under the
right
bridge,
right
by Hillcrest. That was actually amazing. I mean, you miss the big ones. You miss the opportunities to go out to like other ones. And then it's like, I can't just drop every time, you know, like right. I have like, it's the same thing. I have like,
yeah,
a child that needs to, I have to go to work, yeah. I have to come home, and then I have a child that needs to,
yeah,
like,
we
have
had a
attention.
Lot of like,
so
things
I have
to think
like
through.
A 15 minute and you, and like, honestly, like I, like for, so for me. And so I think for anybody like myself who I feel like I just, you know, like don't have the time, you can, what I did is I gave money to, a bailout fund.
There you go.
Like I pretty much gave him like, yeah, I gave
support,
I gave like,
in whatever,
you know,
way
good,
you
like
can,
my,
right?
Whatever you can, because honestly, I just feel like you said, I mean, all joking aside, if you feel like you know, I don't know how I can fit this, and I feel bad saying that, I really do. I'm being completely honest. Like, if I'm being honest,
bro,
with you
got a pregnant wife, an 11 month old kid, and a full time job.
A pregnant wife, and a 10 month old, and a full time job, and you know, and then this gig on the side, and I have a lot, so it's like, every day that I like felt like I was sitting at home, I felt like, God, I'm like not doing anything about this. But then it's like, you know, you realize like there are like, you know, you could do, and it, that goes back to what we were saying for the other episode is also just start like. When you're at home, instead of like that 15 minutes you would spend on Instagram or on Twitter, just looking at like the takes, like read your, you know, like do the first read, do the real reading.
Right,
you know,
right, absolutely.
Don't just read the hot takes, do the real reading a little bit. And then, cause then that, like, you know, that makes you more, I think, you know, just to get you more set up for the work that has to be done later, which is voting. And you need to be
as
knowledgeable as possible. So I think, like, you know, give money when you can, do like the actual reading, and if you can make it out to stuff, make it out. But you know, I just, it's hard, man. I feel so bad.
Yeah.
I really do. I felt so bad, like,
yeah,
I've felt bad for like the last like 2 weeks. But then it's just like, man, I think
it's good that you feel bad. Like, I think you're a bad person and that you don't care.
You think this is my first 2 weeks of feeling bad about myself, buddy? You don't know me.
I got a lifetime.
Feel bad. Yeah, I feel like I'm a bad person. I feel like I'm just constantly just not living up to anything.
Well,
so
I will not counter that. I will.
Yep.
But I will tell you this: if you were a bad person, I would just tell you that to your face. I would not beat around the bush. I would be like, "You are a bad person," and. But yeah. I'm not comfortable saying that to you, but we'll see if there's any typos in this episode description.
When we're actually face to face, like right now, it's kind of hard. It's like,
no.
the impact's not the same thing.
I want you to feel the breath on your neck. I'm speaking from
the
behind.
Hot spittle. Yeah. The hot spittle on my neck. Yeah.
It's gross.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Enjoy this episode with the great Jason Earls. Thank you guys for being listeners. We love you and appreciate you guys so much.
Literally like right before we started, I was just responding to a troll. I think I'm going to work on it this week. Like, I want to do a video on like how to be a good troll. Like, I like a good troll. I like someone who is funny and like might be kind of insightful, or like they'll make fun of me, but not when they just like bad trolling is like just posting like a dumb meme or like they're being overly sensitive. Like, that's not being a troll. That's just not, that's my least favorite thing. And that's what I was dealing with today, is people are like, this isn't funny. You're one-sided, da 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 da. And I was like, just cause you didn't laugh doesn't mean it's not funny. You're just, cause people, if somebody's with me at this point, they have laughed at me. I was talking to Melissa, my wife, about this. I've made fun of myself. I've made fun of most political candidates. I've made fun of dog owners. I've made fun of essential oilers. I've made fun of CrossFitters. I've made fun of, you know, anything and everything. Like, right. It's kind of whatever's around, I make fun of. But
equal opportunist.
Exactly. But then when you get their thing, right, when they're like, oh, but no. And it's like, well, don't be like that. Don't pick and choose, you know.
Brother. I get it, dude. So I've discovered the one thing that people don't want me messing with, and that is the their beloved Candace Owens, brother.
Yeah.
Listen, I probably got about 200 trolls now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, that's an interesting, I'd love to hear your take on that. Cause you know, I knew I had a lot of people send me that Candace Owens thing, just like I had a lot of people send me, you know, the Hodge twins. And there's this clip going around of like a bunch of different like actors, like Morgan Freeman and Anthony Mackie, like kind of talking about what they're essentially the basis of this was like, you know, similar to, I think, Candace Owens' take, which was like a lot of or African-Americans like use this as excuse or our lowest, or what was the Candace thing, like our lowest denominator.
But listen, don't say lowest denominator.
Because, yeah, you know, listen, you're getting it right.
If you, yeah, you misquoted her. Like, how dare you?
Yeah, this was your whole problem, right?
Dude, I made a mistake and said Candace Floyd. Oh, my God.
Yeah. So what was your, well, so for context, you know, Candace Owens did that clip. It went viral. A lot of people shared. 83 million people viewed it. You did a response and you slipped up on the name and maybe a quote, and then people just ignored everything else you said and just trolled those things. Is that essentially what happened?
That's essentially what happened, man. And the people miss the entire deal. So what I was doing, of course, I listened to it. And to be straight up honest, dude, when I started listening to it, I was like, oh, my goodness, let me not. I turned it off because I was like, man, this thing seems so poisonous.
Right.
Just to the race conversation, mm-hmm. especially from my side. Like, whoa, like. What did she say? So I turned it off, stepped away from it so I could approach it and listen objectively. Right. Key word, Candace Owens fans, objectively. So when I listened to it objectively, she started building her framework or her foundation, that helped her get to this idea. So as I listened to the foundation, she quoted this guy by the name of Shelby Steele.
Mm-hmm.
She's, you know, conservative black author. First of all, from Utah. Like, so. Yo, so like you've been to Utah before. How many black people do you know in Utah?
I mean, I didn't meet him, so I don't think.
Yeah, so you didn't meet him.
Are we counting jazz players?
Right, that's what I said. You can't. Karl Malone does not count.
Yeah, yeah. It's white even by my standards.
Absolutely, that's funny, dude. So he gives this idea what would give the term bottom denominator, and says black people are the only people on the face of this earth. Well, he didn't say faces of earth. who cater to the bottom denominator in their culture. And I was thinking, so, you know, I'm a Christian. That's part of the whole Christian belief is that the bottom common denominator, which is all of us being saved. So I'm like, yo, that's an offense to what I believe, not just as a black man, but to what I like the framework of my spiritual insight. So I need to hit that one. And then she said this, Dustin. She said this. She said, black people, we're the only group who fight, scream, demand support for justice for people who do wrong. So that's the framework. And I'm like, yo, justice for people who do wrong. First of all, justice helps people who do wrong and helps people who do right. Like that's, so to say that we, so that's what I attacked. I'm like, yo, most of y'all folks who come in supporting her are these conservative Christian folks, and I'm like, yo, this goes against what you believe, man. Like, you can't say all this stuff about the Jesus that you believe and say, I absolutely agree with this. I didn't even touch the argument.
Yeah.
That most of the black people, out of the hundreds of thousands of black people that I've ever met, none of us have ever tried to make a martyr out of somebody who died to police brutality. But I didn't even touch that. It's the other part that people said, because I misquoted her.
Right.
Which I did. And I take that. Yo, I misquoted it. But if you heard it, if you listened to it, you can figure out, yeah, he didn't mean that. That was a slip of the tongue.
Right.
But Jesus, woo! Ka-ka-ka-ka-ka! Yeah. Yeah. Came. It was like, woo! You would have thought Tupac, Snoop, Biggie, all of them came
back. Yeah. It's, you know, it's so funny, too, because that's not even what she was saying, I was like, when I was listening to it, you know, I was like, I mean, I can't speak on behalf of the African-American community, obviously. And this is, that's the whole point, I think, of what's happening right now, is an attempt to elevate voices that aren't being heard. Now, Candace Owens is a voice that is heard. She has a platform. She's famous. You know, she's, you know, a lot of people, this is their first time hearing about her. But for people who are paying attention, you've seen Candace Owens say things like, you know, she had that viral clip of where, how she's not offended if black people are used the term monkey, are called monkeys. You're like, ooh, you know, like, okay, there's been, and she walks the line where she's like, no, you're monkeying around and this is an offense. And you're like, okay, this is an African-American. I'm hearing this. But again, I won't speak on behalf of African-American culture. That's not my place. But when she said those things that we, you know, the lowest denominator, and I was like, wait a minute, this is what you were saying of, like, it's a Christian idea to help those in need. I was like, that's an American idea too. What do you think? We're all immigrants here. Like, we're all, you know, coming in, like, the life and the liberty and pursuit of happiness. This is an equality thing. That's the whole point of being an American, is that every citizen gets treated equally. You know, and there is obviously a justice, but if there's an, like, there's nothing less American than an injustice.
Right.
You know, like, that's everything of what we stand for, you know? So I was like, I mean, I'm not gonna ignore your voice, but I think I approach this whole situation as an American differently, if that makes sense.
Absolutely, dude. And I mean, to several points. One, when my family and I take trips to the zoo, which we do quite often with different folks, when I go with my white friends and we go by a specific animal, primate, I don't even call, like, man, let's, man, look at that brown animal with that long tail, man. I don't even, like, yo, I just, yeah. No, what you want to eat? Chick-fil-A? No, nothing with chicken in it. I don't eat anything with.
Did you feel like, because, I mean, I respond to a lot of people. And when some people were sending me that video specifically, or there was a couple similar ones, you know, I said, like, I'm listening to this and I respect this opinion and this is a take and everybody gets a view, but from my experience, and this is just my individual experience from who I've read and listened to and spoke to, that opinion is a minority amongst African Americans. Like, that is not a popular opinion amongst the larger community of African Americans. Does that make sense? Absolutely. What I'm saying there?
Yeah. And so here's the equivalent. This is probably one of the best examples, probably not the best actually, but this is the one that keeps popping up in my mind. I've never been, I know we may have, this is a family podcast, I'm assuming, so
yeah, we can take anything out if we
I've never been to one of those social buildings with no windows where they have different individuals opposite sex exercising on a pole. I've never been to one. Never, ever.
Yeah.
I've never been to one.
You've never been stripped
Yeah, right. Yeah, never been strip search, never been to a strip club at all. So, like, Candace Owens would be the equivalent of me speaking to the appropriate code of conduct, if there's such a one, in a strip club. Like, yo, I'm going to tell you, okay, so here's what they do at the strip club. I know, because I like, yo, I just like, I'm going to tell you what. See, that is offensive to everything. No, dude, I've never been to one. I cannot tell you what goes on in there. I don't know what it's like. I don't even know how you pay your money. I don't know. Dude, I know zero about that life.
Yeah.
So I could not.
I think it's Ariel. I think that's right. Yeah, from what I've gained. Which we should implement in more places.
So what, like, but what about the people in the back? It's like, so
you gotta wad it up. You gotta shoot it up like a
air cannon.
Yeah. It is an interesting commentary that I think that as far as strip clubs, I think are the only place where if you kind of throw your money at the stripper, it's considered respectful and of honor, where like it's a good thing. But if you did that in a grocery store, they're like, what are you doing, man? I don't know.
Go to Chick-fil-A and do that.
they'll
you bottom denominator. You.
They're picking it up. My pleasure. My pleasure. Anyway, so you wouldn't know, you can't speak behalf on of strip club etiquette. Neither can I.
If you only ride tricycles, you cannot speak for motorcyclists. And I'm not saying, so again, though, I'm very careful because, you know, again, I don't want to insult her speaker. That's just not the way I roll, but it's difficult for you to speak for a whole group when everybody who I know from that group don't agree.
Right.
So I think what's happening is the reason why she's so popular, because there's a great percentage of people who actually agree with her sentiments about the black community. So it's like, yeah, that's what we've been saying. Come on, tricycle, speak for us, because we don't like motorcycles.
Yeah, I think that's.
I probably just got you. One comedian reposted my video and lost 1,000 followers, bro.
1,000, not bad. I mean, that's a lot to lose. I lost a lot, but I was talking to someone about this earlier. Someone said to me in a comment today, you know, like, you're a one-sided liberal comedian, and I was like, it's just not true. I mean, it's just not. You don't like. Bro. Saying right now. But people like comedians that I'll speak candidly. If you are a great comedian, I'll let you say anything. I will let you. If you are Chris Rock, Dave Chappelle, Bill Burr, I'll let you go up there and tell me why it's ridiculous that I believe in God. You know, it's ridiculous that I have kids. I'd let you insult everything that I stand for, and I'll laugh the whole way.
Yeah, right.
Because I like you as a comedian. And that's like
that
exactly. But if I just like some of your topics, then what I'm realizing for a lot of people, I got a lot of people who like me, like the way that I like certain many comedians. And other people like me like a buffet, you know? They're like, I like the stuff about the kids. I like the stuff about marriage, you know? But now I don't want any of that. And whatever. I mean, as I point out many times, like, these are free websites, you know? And writing topical jokes is not easy. And,
absolutely. You
know, I'm gonna miss every once in a while.
So. Which, by the way, in an attempt to do what Candace Owens did, on behalf of every black person, I appreciate some of your tweets, brother. Some of your Instagram. Oh, I can't speak for everybody, but everybody who I know, who shares my hue, appreciates them.
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate that.
But it's funny, dude. Like, I've been called the super ultra liberal guy since I made that stance.
Really?
People have questioned everything that I've ever done in my life. As a man, as a father, one dude told me, he said, man, you wouldn't dare attack. Cause I issued an apology. I acknowledged that I was wrong in requoting her.
Right.
I mean, and falsely misquoting her.
Yeah.
And I was like, yo, I don't want to attack her. I'm hearing some concepts that are offensive to the very fabric of what I believe and who we say that we are.
Right.
And one dude said, dude, you couldn't attack her. She'll wipe the floor with your dumb ass. Dude, I'm like, oh my goodness. Like, so all this stuff, and it's crazy. So 200 plus people who attacking me, who don't even know me, and the people who know me are laughing at this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, some of this stuff is far from you, which is funny. If I speak out the fact that I might not like what people do to unborn babies, dude, you super conservative. What's crazy is if I speak out against what somebody's saying about black people, right, I'm super liberal. I'm like, dang, what am I then? I ain't got no friends.
You're a comedian is what you are. And
that, absolutely. Thanks, Dustin.
Well, I've told people this, I've posted a few times already too. And if people listen to the podcast, they're the best fans that I have, the people that listen to the pod. But all we can be is our most genuine self.
Come on, man.
And what you have liked about me so far is me being genuine and authentic and speaking about the things that are care and important to me. And yes, racial equality makes my heart beat out of my chest. I get so worked up over this. Like, I get excited, and I'm like, the world is changing right now. The world is changing. Like, and I mean, I went to a rally yesterday.
Come on, sir.
And it was like led. I was like, I felt like I was the oldest person by like 10 years. Wow. And I mean, there were some other going, I was like, man, these are like passionate kids who care about racial equality and are standing up for what they believe in. I was like, it excites me. And I would be doing a disservice to fans and followers and society and myself if I didn't say something about this. Let me speak up, you know?
Say it loud, brother.
But that's the thing. It's the same with you. When you're being a comedian and you're being your most genuine self, if people are really feeling what you're doing, they love it. But then when they're against it, but that's okay. I mean, that's an occupational hazard that we put up. And I like getting in the comments. I do.
Yo, it's so dope, man. Like, yo, thank you. Thank you for taking a jab at me. Yes, I misquoted. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? And I'm going to show you what it looks like for a human being to give a real apology instead of dumbing down on something that we know is dumb.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dumbing down. I don't know. Whatever.
Candace Owens would say more eloquently.
Absolutely.
Kill it. You.
Yeah. And I think that's the blindness. Like, oh, wow. She's so cute and articulate.
Yeah. Yeah. I did a joke. I did a joke today. Yesterday it bombed miserably. Did not get a lot of likes, but it did make a couple people mad. And it was because but I kind of went back and forth with a couple people, and one of them was a cop. And you know, I kind of explained to him. I was like, hey, this is this joke, and me, I'm not anti-cop. That's not where I stand, you know. But I understand that I have a different relationship with the police. I've had different formative experiences with the police than other individuals are, and that's what. And so I kind of went back and forth. But he's a cop. And it was an interesting moment because he shared, he's like, listen, man, I'm a fan of yours, been to your shows, I'm going to work every day right now. Cops are depressed, cops are quitting their jobs, cops are just getting beat up. It was an interesting thing. And what he did is he allowed me to empathize with what he was going through. And I was like, well, that's the point of what we're all doing.
Absolutely, brother. You know? Absolutely.
It doesn't make me – now, that's – me and you taking troll in comments, that's an occupational hazard. And cops, you know, sometimes they're gonna get vilified. That's just part of it, unfortunately, right. You know.
But,
sometimes do and sometimes not do.
But the thing is, we sit back and have allowed anybody who wants to hijack any narrative, they can hijack it.
Yeah, absolutely.
With everything. Look, dude, we can't even control emojis now. Like if I'm excited about a good day and I put a rainbow, that means I'm having marital problems. Right. If I go to the store And I text my wife from the grocery store, you need anything? And she sends me an eggplant emoji. I got to leave the grocery store with nothing. I'm coming straight home for a peach. How did we all hijack that stuff? I come back home with nothing.
Right.
And my wife like, where's the eggplant? I was like, I got it right here. I can't even, dude, they've hijacked the eggplant. I'm like, my wife wants a legit eggplant. To give her one.
I think that's, everybody will interpret, you can't control how people interpret things is what you're saying, right? But all you can do really do, and this is kind of I'm listening to this. I've talked to my kids about this, and I've talked to Melissa, and I've talked to people in the comments about this. To me, the big issue is police brutality. That's what's talking and oppression, and systematic racism. This is what this discussion is about. And so you'll see, I get a lot of comments, so people, they'll be like, well, what about abortion? But when we're talking about abortion, let's talk about abortion. When we're talking about this, let's talk about this. We're right. And that's kind of, I think, the point and the goal that a lot of people should have is like, if this is the large issue, the answer, the cure to this is to elevate voices that aren't being heard, not just here's my opinion. You know what I mean by that? Like,
dude, absolutely. So I used to teach, here's what I say, that our culture has become ADHD. Mm. And so, as I used to teach, and there were kids who, all kinds of kids, you got the ED, emotionally disturbed, the ADD, attention deficit, but then you got the attention deficit hyper disorder. And that kid, those are the kids that they made Father Abraham for back in school. Drive your hands up now, say nod your head, all that stuff. That's for him. Because it's so much stuff in that, like in our culture, in conversations, everybody just jumps. They say one thing and it's on to the next. Like, hey, I don't like abortion. And then so soon as the person starts talking abortion, but hey, and there's no logical argument. It's like trying to have a conversation with a Jehovah's Witnesses about when they knock on the door. Jehovah's Witness, I love y'all, I do. It's just a different conversation that you have, and they just jump it.
I mean, online, that's one of the challenges of online conversations and gaslighting. And I think another one is that I come down to with folks is I'll go back and forth with some folks every once in a while, and I'll realize, and I'll tell them this, hey, the breakdown now, where we're at now, is two things. One, empathy and an attempt to listen and not talk. And that's hard for me to do because I talk for a living. Mm-hmm. But the other one, and this sometimes is like just as much of a breaking point, where you go, we're dealing with different definitions of facts. And we're dealing with different sources of where we gain our information.
Yeah.
So we're going to just start throwing articles and stats at each other, but it won't change anybody because you trust source A and I trust source B, and you live in reality A and I live in reality B. It's like Spider-Man, like different dimensions.
Right.
and you really do at that point, it's a stalemate, Hey, no one's going anywhere here. This is, go ahead.
It's the equivalent of a husband and wife having a disagreement.
Yeah.
And if they're handling the disagreement in an unhealthy way, the way that my wife and I handle it sometimes.
Yeah.
It's like we've had to learn how to disagree and work through an argument. Because at first, early on in the marriage, it was like, you left the toilet seat open, up. Well, you got all your hair products on the sink and your makeup. Well, you got hair on the sink and you didn't wipe it up from when you shaved that beard of yours. Like, yeah, but you look at your sink. And it's like, so as long as we pointing out those facts, did I leave the seat up? Yes. Did she have makeup on the dress sink? Yes. Did I have hair on the sink? Yes. Like, all those things are factual. And so we're so busy trying to point out those facts that we forget that we're trying to work towards a common goal, and that's to live this marriage in unity,
yeah,
and one accord. And I, so what I've been telling people is, so when I'm having the race conversation, and which I enjoy having them. So if y'all got some different opinions of me, like holler at me, let's talk about it. Mm-hmm. Like, yo, let's approach it like this. Let me hear what you're saying. Mm. And the way that my wife and I had to start doing arguments is like this. We call it playing ball or playing catch. I say something, or I'd lay this first. If she says an offense to me, I can't defend myself. I have to repeat it.
Yeah.
So if she say you left the toilet seat up, I can't say, well, I had to pee real bad. I gotta say, what you're saying is I left the toilet seat up. Mm-hmm. And if she says yes, I'm saying that, then I can say, okay. Then I go and give an explanation. Like, okay, let me explain to you why I left the toilet seat up. I was rushing because, you know, the baby was about to do something and I didn't want it to fall while I was using the bathroom. So as soon as I finished, I ran and caught it. She can't say, and you didn't wash your hands? That's what's wrong with you all the time. You don't wash your hands. Right. She's got to say, so what you're saying is you left the toilet seat up because you had to run and get the baby after you peed. Absolutely. That,
yeah.
That little conversation right there cuts out about 10 minutes argument. Mm. Mm. So I just think, if we just get to the point where we're like learning to repeat what each other's saying before we start giving rebuttals or defense or right. counterattacks, yo, I think we would have better conversations.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I responded to someone today. It's funny you say that. And, you know, she's like, oh, I miss jokes, something like that. I miss when comedians were just being comedians. And I always that's one thing that if like, man, if you want to get under my skin, tell me that.
I'd rather quit your day job.
Exactly. Well, I would rather them tell me a joke isn't funny than right. tell me that they don't like hearing my opinion on something. You know, mm-hmm. like I agree. Nobody hates my jokes more than me. I'm with you on that. If you think it isn't that's funny, right. that's easy to convince me of. But I responded and I was like, no, you know, actually, you know, you do like my opinions, or you like comedy because you like my opinions and takes. It's this one you don't like. And she responded very graciously. And she's like, you know, I actually go to comedy to escape. I go to comedy to not think about these things. And I was like, that's fair. That's a fair yeah. take. I can't be that for you, though. I'm not that. I haven't been that. I got to talk about the things that I want to talk about. And they're going to be funnier long term because, right, I mean, someone told Tim Hawkins this and Tim Hawkins told me this, right? I mean, you got to write passion, not funny. You know, you got to write the things that you care about. And these are the things that I care about. I mean, and if you had been in any of my shows, you knew I was talking about race stuff anyways. You know, like,
yeah, absolutely.
I've posted clips about it. This has never been a topic that I've avoided, you know. So, but there, like you said, I mean, she said that and I heard it and I felt it. And I was like, no, I get it. And we can move on. I mean, she probably is going to unfollow me, but that might be for the best.
Right. Yeah. And see, and that's the beauty. That concept right there is the beauty of what most of us young comics need to understand, and the mistake that a lot of us, in particular comedians who come up in that church circuit, is like mm-hmm. most of the time jokes are developed not out of an authentic place of who we are, but based off of the audience. Mm-hmm. So the comedian never necessarily finds that inner voice for himself. So it's but I've heard somebody say it like this: you do your jokes authentically to you and your crowd will find you. If you develop your jokes based off of a crowd, then your audience will never find you.
Right. Right. And I think what you're probably seeing is even if you lose followers wide, you're going to grow followers deep, right? I mean, people who are really, really feeling, because for every, I act like it's, for every negative comment, I'm getting 3 or 4, thank you for speaking up on this, or even just like, LOL, this is hilarious, you know, it's just, I don't know what it is, like, I mean.
So here is, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, say your thing.
So here is what I just got finished playing golf with a friend, and I actually had to call the friends like, "Hey, man, it's been a rough 2 days with all this stuff that I've gotten from this Candace Owens video that I did. I just need to go get my mind off of everything. Let's go play golf." And I was just walking him through just this process of, like, I gotta ask myself, what's wrong with me that if I gained 300 more followers from posting and misquoting Candace Owens for people who hurt my heart, and there are 30 dislikes on this video, why am I paying more attention to these 30 dislikes
than
the 300 new followings that I got on my stuff? And that's a real question. Hopefully, you know, when I dug down to it, it's like I know why, and it's a good reason why that one bothered me, because I felt like they were calling my integrity, taking shots at my integrity,
right?
Because I misspoke. Like, yo, I misspoke. You would call that a lie. I take it. It wasn't the truth. So logically, we would say that's a lie,
right?
But that is not necessarily stand against my integrity. Because, you know, even, you know, a great man to fall 7 times and get back up again. So let me show you and demonstrate what it looks like for you to fall and get back up and give a true, specific, detailed apology.
Yeah.
Except for a general, like, you know what, we blew it, NFL. So we apologize to all the players instead of naming specific players.
Yeah.
Oh, did I? Oh, snap.
Hypothetically.
Right. Hey, some of y'all don't like a specific song that we played, and kind of, in the middle of the song, decided to posture your body a certain way.
Yeah.
Like, yo, I called all my stuff out. If you go and watch part two, I called every single thing that I did wrong out.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, that's like the hard work of like that hard, quiet work that you got to do on your own self.
Yes.
I had that moment. I was going to sleep the other night, and this was like 2 or 3 days, you know, kind of the defund the police thing came up, right?
Yeah.
And that's like the topic right now. Like, it's, I feel like the narrative has, I don't want to say narrative, I feel like the focus is on that right now. That's what the discussion is about right now. And it kind of hit me, and I was thinking about my cop friends who I've been in contact with a lot during this, you know, texting, "Hey, how you doing? You know, I know it's a tough time," and stuff like that. Even though there are issues that I have, you know, with the cops. But I mean, these are still my friends, and I'm grateful. And I was thinking about why does the idea of defunding the police, why does that hit me? Why does it, like, oh gosh. And I stopped and I go, well, because the police keep me safe. And I want my safe keeper to be around. To me, they represent protection and safety, you know, and that's been my experience. And then it just hit me. And if you're on the flip side of that, and you feel like the police are your oppressors, they're having the exact same feeling, but with the opposite application, which is the thing that's hurting me, I want to stop hurting me. And I'm saying the thing that keeps me safe is the thing that's, I want that to still be there. And you can disagree or agree with whatever one of those is true, but the point is, it hit me and I was like, we all want the same thing here. Yes. We all want to live in peace and we all want to live in harmony. And I'm saying, I want this thing that keeps me safe to keep me safe. And others are saying, I want this thing that's hurting me to stop hurting me. Absolutely. And that took like, that's what you're saying. I was like, that's the quiet work though, of just like unpacking, why do I feel the way that I feel? And that's, I can't just look at you and go, Jason, I empathize with you. Empathy isn't a switch, right? Like, you got to sit in that and go, oh yeah. And if the thing that I thought was supposed to keep me safe was hurting me, I can't imagine a bigger nightmare.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. And it's a matter of, I've been telling people, yo, just listen. I can't tell you how many of my white friends phone calls I've received the last 2 weeks. Mm. And it's been exhausting. Not from like everybody calling me, but just having conversation after conversation. And it's like, yo, Jason, what do I do? I like, I don't know what you specifically should do. Like, what's on your heart? Like, here's what I told, Ricky, like, yours might be different. Like, why do you feel the need to do something? But here's what it is. Yo, just sit and listen to people.
Yeah.
Like, people that you disagree with, sit down and just listen to them, because you find out, like, shoot, I want the police to keep me safe too.
Mm-hmm.
I do. I also want this really happen in the suburb that I live in. I don't want my neighbor calling the cops on me because I'm knocking on her door to film a fire ant mound that's on this public sidewalk for a video that I'm working on. But because I'm the only black dude on the street, I know I better knock on the door. Like, I don't want that to happen. I don't want the police to have to come when he was dispatched for me to stand in front of my front yard and him to say, what are you doing out here? You don't live here. Can you prove it? So, so it's stuff like that. Like, yo, I don't want that. But doggone it, when I call 911, I want him to show up. We on the same squad. And I think that's, so one, I think even me listening to the argument, because I didn't understand defund the police cry when I first, I was like, wait. What are we talking about? Oh, I understand what you're saying. But again, I don't. The guy that I go to the Rangers baseball games with all the time, or send my sons to with the base to the Rangers baseball game, is a retired cop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've got guys, one of my son's mentors who I trust with my son to spend the night with and go out of town is a police officer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so I'm looking at great comedy concept as well. Like, man, it's what I actually thought about. Can you imagine, like, what happens if we defund the police? What happens if we take all the money away from the police officers and start charging everybody? So listen, 911, what's your emergency? Like, this Jason Earl such and such street. Hold on, sir. Can I have your password for your 911 account?
Or it's like the hospital. They're like, all right, that's going to be a $35 copay. It's going
to
be.
Or they start, you got to prepay, and based off the cop service, they start debiting out of your account.
Yeah. Like,
oh, you want me to put handcuffs on them? $50. Oh, you want me to actually take them downtown? First, there's a transport fee.
Yeah.
There's this gas fee. Yeah.
Like ordering shrimp on the side. You're like, come on now.
Right.
On.
So that's a funny concept. But in the seriousness of it, when you look at, again, I just made my case of how I support police and know the police officers. At the same time, I'm seeing just some consistencies in the lives of young men who don't have weapons or guns in their hand and whose lives are being taken away from them. And there's little to none consequences for that. And the tough thing is, if an officer can prove that he was afraid for his life, he gets off. And I'm like, that's some very tough hair splitting. Mm-hmm. That everybody has very strong opinions on it. And I'm a uniter, not a divider. I am a poker, so I like poking bears. And a thought provoker.
Mm-hmm.
So I love everybody. Police officers, if you're listening, I love you, especially even if you're a horrible one. I still love you. I wish you would stop. And if you're a great one, hey, keep it up, man. Keep it safe. And if you're black, I love you. I love white people too, Hispanics.
I love just
North Islanders.
I just
Asians.
Love that little subtle, like, if you're a horrible one, I love you. I wish you would stop. But it's like the most tame rally, like, chant. Instead of, hey ho, these racist cops have gotta go. It's like, hey, horrible cops, I wish you would stop. I wish I plead with you to stop in your horrible ways. I wish.
Pretty please.
Pretty please. Yo, pretty please. It's the opposite. It's the opposite of looting and rioting.
Right. You know,
you're coming. You're coming in. You're actually cleaning up the police station.
Right.
I'm gonna. Hey, man. I wish you would stop. I wish.
Right. And then people start fussing all that. See, they're protesting wrong. They're doing work for free. See, they're reinforcing slavery. Like, yo, we can't win. We can't say nothing. We can do absolutely nothing, man.
Oh, man, that is hysterical, man. Well, you mentioned it, and this is, you know, we talk about family a lot. I mean, this be a good place to kind of land a little bit of six kids, right?
By the same woman. Let me say that.
Let me not
perpetuate the stereotypes.
What's the gender breakdown? How many of each?
Three and three, man.
Three and three. I'd love to just hear you kind of like, what's this conversation look like? Because I see a lot of this right now. I'd be like, dear white people, here's how to talk to your kids about racism and the cops. And from what I know from my African-American friends is that these are conversations that have been had. These aren't, you know, this isn't like, you, I mean, there's, you don't have the privilege, the white privilege of not talking about these things.
Right.
And you know, what do those kind of conversations like look like? And I know they change with age, and I know they change with gender, because, you know, we had a couple of weeks ago, we talked about this with Mike Goodwin, and he has his youngest is his boy. And he goes, that conversation to my African-American son is going to mm-hmm. look different than my African-American daughter. So what do those kind of conversations look like as far as just, hey, this is the world that we live in. This is what you experience. This is what to expect. This is how you handle, how you navigate it. You know, what does that look like in the Earl's household?
That's great. That's a great question. And note that my kids range from eight years old all the way up to 18.
Mm-hmm.
And man, so we've had these conversations for 18 years. And even beforehand, just talking about what it was going to be like to raise our kids in our culture. So one thing that I noticed is that I was in fourth grade before I'd ever stepped foot into a white person's house.
Mm.
The next time after fourth grade that I stepped foot into a white person's house was in my freshman year in college. So that's already
right.
It places me at a disadvantage of understanding
mm.
a white person. Because if I'm not that close in proximity to them, then, you know, even though we may go to school together, just not outside of our the business of life, we don't have. So I made sure my wife and I, and I saw the struggle on the other side as well.
Mm.
People who never been part of a black community making assessments off of a black community they know nothing about.
Mm.
And I didn't want my children to be that way. So we made sure we placed ourselves and built relationships with people who don't look like us.
Right.
Like we are, you know, we are all the way in the black experience. So, yeah. You know, we understand and love our culture that we come from.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have embraced others to where we've developed relationships where my kids, before they were introduced to this concept of racism, had a white guy that they called uncle,
mm.
had his wife that they call aunt, and their children that they called cousins.
Mm.
So, and my kids didn't go to daycare because my wife has always stayed at home with them. So we kind of had more of a curtain pulled, hiding that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So when we first pulled back the curtains, it was great.
Yeah,
we showed them the movie Pride, the swimming movie.
Mm-hmm.
And we stopped it and we asked him, hey, which team are you going for? Because I don't do, when you were growing up and there was a white wrestler and a black wrestler, I always wanted to know this. I would always cheer for the black wrestler just by default.
Yeah.
I don't know if y'all did that with, I mean, y'all had a bunch to choose from. We only had like two.
Yeah. Yeah, my favorite wrestler growing up was Yokozuna. So I liked the Japanese one personally.
Nice.
I liked the big sumo guy. So
yeah, that's great. And so I guess for me, because I never saw anybody who looked like me, I would automatically cheer for the person who did look like me.
Right, right, right.
So we showed them that movie, asked them who were they going for. Most of my kids started saying the black team, the black team. And then one of my kids said, I'm going the one that's an athlete and doesn't realize what's going on. He's like, I'm going for the white team, who was clearly being racist.
Yeah.
And my kids looked at him like, what do you say? And I didn't let him say anything. So then as the movie progressed, we would stop it and talk about it. And they're really young at this point. And so then at the end of the movie, when I asked them who were they going for, all of them somehow shifted to the black team. And then immediately after the movie was over, I pulled up the Olympics swim team.
Yeah.
With the black dude and a white dude. And I said, what color team is that? They're like, it's a black. It's a what? It's what kind of team is that? And I was like, listen, all white people don't hate you. Hmm. And in fact, as people who claim to be Christians, we supposed to unite with people who don't just look like us, with people who look like us. So that's the basis that they would introduce this concept to. Mm-hmm. Then as they got older, it's like, hey, dude, you cannot go into the store and put your hands in your pocket. Mm-hmm. Well, why can't I? I was just like, you see that man right there? He's just walking around. You know, he's the asset protection is what they call it.
Yeah.
You know, and just helping my son, who's now 18, who wants to go running in our neighborhood, who called the police on me for knocking on their door. Like, dude, you can't be. I need to know your run. Yes, you're 18, but I need to know your exact coordinates when you're running. When my daughter's in school and in her small group at her table, since all of them think they're innocent, they ask little what they think are innocent race questions.
Yeah.
That they've been taught. So like teaching them, my greatest concern is not that my children are assured themselves when they get in that environment. I know they'd have that at home anyway.
Right.
But I want them to be able to handle those arguments well, to sometimes be that snarky comedian.
It sounds like,
how did you respond to that? What right. did you say?
Right.
When a classmate asks, hey, do you like chicken and watermelon? Mm. Like this is the crap that my kids have been asked.
Yeah.
And so it's how do you do that? Like making sure now that my son's driving, like, dude, here's what you got to do when the police stops. Like, and like, Joe, I don't want him to be afraid, but we're seeing what happens if that police is afraid for his life.
Right.
Right. You got to help disarm him.
Right.
Not knowing what his perception of you is.
Right. It's like you preach to them the ideal, but you got to teach to them the reality.
And that's the most, I always ask myself, am I deceiving myself by trying to tell them that am I an idealist too much, where here's what the world should be like?
Right.
That's the most heartbreaking thing that I got to teach him. Like, hey, yeah. You know, like, man, here is a cop who does not look like us. He's white. Mm. He loves you. Know that. Mm. But you can't automatically assume that the next officer trusts you like he trusts you. Dude, that's so heartbreaking. And I got to teach that to a 9-year-old. And they see the stuff. What do I do when I send my kids back, you know, to Virginia for the summer? Like, it's tough, man.
Yeah.
It's so doggone tough. But I think the reality is, what has helped us so much are those relationships with people who don't look like us, who we have into our homes. So regardless of what everybody out in the world and what they see on the news, it totally goes against the paradigm, the base level of their thinking, because they've seen it lived out by their parents. Mm-hmm. And so in some ways, it actually brings about a little confusion sometimes, like what's really going on here?
Yeah.
Like they sometimes they just trying to understand how every human is different, and some who look the same hate you. Mm. Or some who look the same speak out against people being the lowest denominator. I mean the bottom denominator.
Oh, like a true comedian, you did a callback at the end. Well, I appreciate you, man. I miss you. I love you. I hope we get to spend some time together in person.
Absolutely.
Soon.
And let me just say to you, let me say to you in front of your audience, and you have an amazing audience. One person even came to one of my shows because they love comedy because of you. Dude, let me just say, and you cannot edit this out of the podcast because it might get a little sentimental. Dude, I remember getting a phone call from one of your mentors saying, hey, I got this young dude who's getting into comedy, and I know you're a comedian. Can you give him some advice? And just from that phone call, seeing where you are now, how hard you've worked, how in the midst of working so hard, have you remained faithful to your wife, faithful to your family, and faithful to the craft, my friend, dude, is... It is not just admirable, but it needs to be acknowledged, and it needs your following needs to know how consistent of a man you are and a man of integrity to be integral with your family and your funny brother. Big ups.
Thank you. That's very kind of you. I'm glad this is audio because I don't like people seeing me get emotional.
I'm like, what? Did he get some stuff in his eye?
Yeah.
that's real, man. That is real.
Yeah, and I've been nothing but grateful for your encouragement all along the way, my friend.
For sure.
Thanks for listening to that episode, everybody. I wanted to give a special shout out to our designated drivers. That is our highest level of patrons. Demarius Diaz-Stevens, Troy Meacham, Dave Hoagland, and Rachel Jakewith. Really appreciate your support of the podcast. If you have not already, please like and subscribe and share. Backseaters, you mean the world to us. Thanks so much for tuning in.